The following is rated not safe for work. It contains strong language, adult situations, and lots of spoilers. Discretion is advised.
In the criminal justice system, cinematic-based offenses are considered especially heinous. The dedicated attorneys who investigate these villainous films are members of an elite squad known as the Reels of Justice. These are their stories.
Order, please, order. The Reels of Justice is now in session. Judge Big Ben Hassler presiding. We all rise for the Honorable Judge Hassler. Be seated. Welcome to the Reels of Justice. Today, we are hearing the case of The People versus High Plains Drifter, a 1973 Western about a mysterious stranger that rides into town and agrees to protect the town folk for a steep price. For those of you unfamiliar with the court proceedings, we are here to determine if this film is guilty of being a bad movie. As always in this courtroom, films are considered excellent until proven awful, and the burden of proof lies upon the prosecution to prove beyond the shadow of reasonable doubt that this film is guilty. Mr. Dylan J. Schlender, you are appearing on behalf of the prosecution. You may present your opening statement.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ladies and gentlemen of the court, High Plains Drifter is Clint Eastwood's second directorial offering, and he clearly bit off more than he could chew. It is why he essentially remade this film, much more explicitly, in Pale Rider 12 years later in 1985. Legendary Western actor John Wayne famously reacted negatively to the violence in this movie, and that is very understandable. For you see, the 70s were moving into a different direction of filmmaking, and some were able to adjust better than others. Eastwood, at this time, was leaning heavily on the influence of Western directors he had worked with, but still was trying to sneak in some of that 70s pessimism and paranoia that I just love talking about so well on this program. In this case, we are going to look at the thematic elements High Plains Drifter grapples with. We are going to look at the novice and derivative skills of Eastwood's technical ability. And we will finally settle down and agree that Eastwood's best Western is The Outlaw Josie Wales. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schlender. And appearing on behalf of the defense is one called Manders. Please present your opening statement.
Well, I ain't going to be all fancy as y'all, but I think High Plains Drifter is a great movie. Now, I ain't saying it's the best Western of all time, but when you think of anti-heroes, right, think of Stone Cold Steve Austin, you think of The Rock, you think of the NWO, and I believe and feel that they were influenced by Clint Eastwood and being the man with no name. Furthermore, it's about... I feel High Plains Drifter is really about being independent, and that's what a lot of people strive to be and want to be. And it ain't going to give you the best graphics. It ain't going to give you the best whatever the damn CGI and all that. But it'll give you a lot of grit, toughness, little bit of mystery. And shows why America's great. So that's my case.
Thank you, Manders. Mr. Slender, you may present your first exhibit.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I would say this movie, it kind of has a vibe to it. It's kind of creepy. It's almost like a horror movie. You know, there's a lot of like suspense. And Eastwood has been on record saying that there's supposed to be a supernatural element to the film. I don't think you can quite pick up on that just watching the movie. It might be there, but it's a little clunky. And with the way we see that is we see the vision of the former marshal being murdered. So we know that that's the driving force for Clint Eastwood's character, right? He could be a ghost. He could be a relative. There's a theory I favor is that he's death himself, right? He comes riding in on a pale horse. He leaves hell behind him, you know, so I think that's an interesting thing. And again, It's a point that's made much more explicitly in Pale Rider, which I think is sort of Clint Eastwood's way of apologizing for this one. You know, yeah. So whatever theory you prefer, Your Honor, all circle back to the idea of retributive or even divine justice, you know, because we're talking about justice. You know, it's such a lofty goal. And wait. I'm sorry. What am I seeing here in my notes? Yes, he rides into town and rapes someone immediately. Okay, so there is nothing that quite undermines the idea of biblical justice than having your protagonist rape a woman he did not win in battle. What is this movie we are watching? I said biblical. There are rules in the Old Testament, but let's not get into that. This is a court of facts, not a court of... boy, I'm digging a hole. So
you really are.
Much like myself, we're painted into a corner. You see here? Like, how are we supposed to root for this guy? We cannot ignore this scene. And let me assure you, in all my research for this movie, it is met with a huge amount of hand-waving. I read a part of a book. It was like the philosophy of Clint Eastwood. It had a whole part about High Plains Drifter. Had one sentence about the rape. They're like, well, you know. And I'm like, really? So we have to watch this movie right out the gate. We have to see that. We're like, Clint Eastwood, what are you doing? So I think time has shown that Eastwood has missed the mark here. And that's why, again, going back to Pale Rider, which is basically the remake of this, where he's explicitly a ghost, he's explicitly a good guy character, it's decidedly less ambiguous, and we are better for it. So that's my first point, Your Honor. We are immediately shown a rape scene by our protagonist. What the hell are we doing here? Guilty.
Okay, Manders, can you defend it better than, well, you know.
Well, I mean, obviously what he did isn't cool or good, but, you know, life's pretty fucked up. And yeah.
Is he supposed to be a good guy?
I don't. So he's not supposed to be. He's not supposed to be at all. But he's not supposed to be a bad guy either. It's kind of like he's just there. And he's just going to do his thing.
He's a force of nature.
And that's kind of what I think.
And how do you feel about the darker tone of this movie as compared to other Westerns?
I would agree. It definitely has a gothic horror vibe. I guess would be the... It blends with that, with the Western feel, and or like they call it dark country or whatever.
Oh, that's cool.
I agree. Right, like a lot of it with the movie, they describe as Clint Eastwood the devil, right, or is he hell or whatever, right? Because they paint the town Largo in red, right, and he comes in as a, you know, with the white horse, you know. And just like the biblical senses of that.
That's certainly the theory I favor. And I think it's very easy to imagine that Clint Eastwood is death manifest. I wish he did. And that's one of the, that's why I have to knock it. It's just, I wish he did a better job of being more explicit with it. As everyone recalls at the end of the movie, Mordecai, the diminutive little assistant that he had throughout the film, he says, like, I never had, well, we have to be careful here, for me. So he says, you know, I didn't even, he's like, oh, geez, I didn't even know your name.
Don't right? do the voice.
Oh, okay.
Be careful, says, and then does that.
Oh, okay, rewind the tape. So he says, I don't even know your name. And Clint Eastwood's like, yeah, sure you do. You know, and we see them, he's making the marshal's grave. So it's like, aha, he's the marshal's ghost. Or he's the marshal's brother? We don't really know. I would have appreciated punching up the supernatural elements of the movie a bit. Maybe give him a magic power or something, you know? Really lean into it. And but I'm just afraid he missed the mark.
I'm curious by it, where it's like, it's the realms of reality, where it's like, does he have powers? We don't know. Like, or is he just some dude? Or it's like that fear of the unknown. And I feel like this movie does do that a lot.
Yeah, I would say that is a big element of it. It's just not really being able to put a button on it. And I feel when you do that, like, the audience can decide. It's like, boo, come on. Right, you know, right. I paid good money to see this movie, well, as far as that.
We'll let the jury decide, Mr. Slender.
Yeah, I guess we do.
Your next exhibit.
Okay, we will let the jury decide that. So my next point, Your Honor and distinguished members of the court, is that I am inclined to give Eastwood a little bit of slack, since he was really just aping the directors that made him a star. You know, but one of the things he demanded was that this whole town be built, right? This whole town is a set that's built so he could film inside, on location. The movie's filmed in sequence. So when things blow up, you know, they're done. They're not rebuilding the house. And all I could think of is, my goodness, what a waste of time and talent. Because you know what it reminds me of, really? It reminds me of Popeye, you know, with Robin Williams. They built that really – no, this is true. This is true. And Ryan Luis Rodriguez will back me up on this. They built this whole town in Popeye, this sea shanty town. It was sweet. It was awesome. But then they had no money for, you know, like a script, talent, a believable octopus. And I feel we kind of get that in High Plains Drifter. We get this really nice set, and we don't get a story or acting ability that can rise to meet it, because everything Eastwood does, and this movie's not particularly long, but my God, it feels long. It feels plodding. It just clocks in at an hour 45. But don't be surprised if you're checking your watch or your phone, or if you're really in the spirit, maybe you have an old wind-up pocket watch, you know? I don't know. It's just cowboys, so watching this. You know, so there's just this lack of dynamicism that does not serve the spectacular set. It doesn't build tension, because it's made so very clear so very early on that we're not to really care about the townsfolk. And then with the aforementioned bad deeds of Clint Eastwood's character, we don't really care about him either. So you kind of have a beautiful plate, but the chicken's raw.
It's raw!
Okay, Manders, the prosecution has ceded that the set does look good, but do you think the script also matches the level that the set has?
I would agree. Yeah, I would agree. Look, right, this is in 73. This is about, what, like a decade or two before Clint Eastwood won a big picture or an Oscar or anything like that. So it's not like it's like his greatest work. But I think the fact that – I'm not saying he didn't try – but the fact that he means that he didn't try makes the movie even better, if that makes sense.
How so?
Because, like, for example, right, like, you know, everybody wants, you know, when you think of, you know, a five star rated movie, you think of all the checklists and check marks of like what makes a good movie, right? The drama, the passion, the this, the that. I mean, I ain't no, I'm not a Dave Meltzer of movies or whatever the fuck. But where was I going with this? But with High Plains Drifter, right, it's when you think of the definition of an outlaw, right, it's kind of a person that just does whatever they want. And Clint Eastwood, if anybody is an outlaw, it's Clint Eastwood, right? Like, obviously, Josie Wales is a better outlaw movie, and even Fistful of Dollars and all that too is also a better movie. But for this story and just Clint Eastwood being Clint Eastwood before we even really knew Clint Eastwood, at least back in 3, he's kind of just, I'm just going to make this movie and I'm going to make it this mysterious. And it's definitely out there. Like, there's no, And really, if you think about it, it's really not even a Western. It's really like a horror ghost story kind of tale, if you think. That's what I think, at least. And that's kind of like a lot of the old West was, where you hear the legends of stories of, you know, tall tales. Like, guy comes into town and you don't know his name. And then all of a sudden, Marshall Duncan dies. And then, like, it's like, what the hell's going on here? And, you know, and then he rapes a girl, and then he has this altercation with a girl, and then there's three three gunfighters that from the town that wants to take him out, and he literally kills them in like 3 seconds. It's like these supernatural things that he's doing that's not, it's not human, right?
Okay.
Yeah, and I think to tack on to that supernatural point and some of the biblical stuff that what makes that makes some of this movie interesting too is you think about everyone who survived at the end. Because first of all, I want to point out one of my points is going to be the climax of this movie is kind of boring. Yes, you know, but to keep an interest. It's 73, and Clint Eastwood doesn't engage in a lot of the violence there. The town gets razed, and everyone gets shot pretty much, except who survives? It's the Meek. It's Mordecai. It's the cowardly sheriff, you know? So the Meek will inherit the earth, you know? So it's just an interesting biblical thread to keep pulling on for this movie. Again, if it was made a little more explicitly, I think it would have been better, and I think Manders brought up an interesting point about how this movie is made. It is kind of out there. We clearly do see Eastwood decided this really wasn't the way he was going to keep making movies, so I don't think we can discount that, because his next, never mind his next movies, but his next Westerns in particular are much more dialed in, a little tighter in focus, you know, so this one serves as the outlier. And I'll leave it to the jury to whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm of a mind that it's not so great.
Manders, does the non-cookie cutterness of this movie help or harm it?
That's a good question. It depends on how you look at it, right? Like, I think. In a sense of, if you want it to be the stereotype Western, it's not for you. But if you want to, like, for example, for me, right, I've seen so many damn Westerns in my life that when I first ever saw this, I was like, holy shit, this is out there with all with the biblical stuff. It's not meat and potatoes, right? I mean, like, sure, there's fighting and there's horses and there's cowboys and, you know, there's women and there's drinking and all that kind of stuff, right? They have all that in there, but there's deeper meaning where I think you do have to be dialed in order to understand it, because it seems like nothing's going on. But if you really get close, if you really try to dial in, there's stuff out there in the movie. So,
okay.
I guess it depends on the person, I think.
Mr. Prosecutor, did you have any further exhibits?
I'm pretty much ready to rest, Your Honor. I would just like, again, to point out that the explicit violence in this movie, when you compare it to other Westerns, you know, it's why John Wayne, he very famously wrote a letter to Clint Eastwood condemning this movie. And John Wayne, not known for being a hippie, you know, so to offend the sensibilities of, at the time, and possibly of all time, the greatest Western actor, I wouldn't discount that so lightly. You know, there's some toothpaste you can't get back in the bottle. And when you look at Eastwood's movies since then, I think you could see a tinge of regret for what this movie did to the Western genre. And I don't think it ever quite recovered. And with that, I will rest my case, Your Honor.
Is some toothpaste you can't get in the bottle, is that original to you? Because if so, I'm stealing it.
What? No, that's the thing. You can't get the toothpaste back in the bottle. You can't get the genie back in the bottle. You can't get... Wait, you can't back get the toothpaste? Tube? Yeah, back in the tube. You go ahead and try to get toothpaste in a bottle. Okay, I'll wait.
Your Honor, I think the prosecutor wants the Western to have light tubes and glass and wants it to be deathmatchy, and it doesn't have to be sometimes.
That's true.
The prosecution is rested. Manders, you may present your first exhibit in defense of the film.
Look, like, when we think of Clint Eastwood, we think of him as a pretty conservative filmmaker, right? Probably. One could agree.
Mm-hmm.
And a conservative person, yes.
Yeah, and also.
Yeah. Well, what about Million Dollar Baby with the whole assisted suicide thing at the end? That's the only thing I got.
No other spoilers than that, for other films, please, Mr. Prosecutor.
Oh, right, my bad. I'm sorry.
Right, so like not. So we're not thinking, you know, politically and like stylistically, right? Or he's never been like a stylistic, flashy filmmaker. But I think High Plains Drifter, he keeps it lean and simple, right? But it's also daring. It's weird. I think it's wonderful. I mean, obviously, it's back in 73, right? So it's like, you know, besides partying and rock and roll and music, right? 73 was great, but obviously in the and watching a film in 73, it's, you know, it's not going to be that great watching it versus like when you watch movies today, right? But I think it shows, like, if you're a big diehard Clint Eastwood fan, it makes you, you know, figure out like, okay, this was the direction he wanted to be. This is what he wanted to do. He had to try things to figure it out. Maybe Clint Eastwood was in a weird teenage moment in his filmmaking when he put on when he directed High Plains Drifter, right? He wanted it to get a little weird, a little crazy, doesn't know what's going on, ups and downs, inside out, and that's kind of what life is, right? And we see, you know, without him having High Plains Drifter, right, we wouldn't have seen all the great other movies that he made. So
I would remind you that some of the films being made today are Morbius. Mr. Prosecutor, do you have any thoughts about the experimental nature of this film?
You're not wrong.
Well, I just to reiterate a point I kind of touched on, Clint Eastwood's oeuvre since then just leads me to believe that he went to here and decided this isn't where he wanted to be, and he's made stronger movies since. I don't know what his career would look like if he kept moving in this direction. He probably would have made some sweet non-Western movies with this idea, but, you know, we wouldn't have the great Westerns that he did after this, like The Outlaw Josey Wales or Pale Rider or anything like that. So, I mean, this may have been a necessary toe dip into weirdness, but that doesn't make it good, and it does make it bad, which makes it guilty. And that's my response to that.
And if it weighs the same as a piece of wood.
A duck.
Manders, did you have any further exhibits?
Manders, do you want to talk about the supernatural element of the movie? Because in the movie, the sheriff's already dead when Eastwood gets into town.
Right.
Right. So Eastwood dreams about it. So, like, you know, what do you think Eastwood's character represents? Is, you know, is he a ghost? Is he a relative? Is he just a man who's here for justice? Because clearly the town is guilty. The town has done wrong.
Yeah, the town is wrong, right? They want, you know, it's like a mining town. Is it not? Isn't that what it is?
Yes.
Yeah, they're trying to cover up the mining rights, and the marshal was going to blow the whistle, so they have the gunman kill the marshal by bullwhipping him to death. Very, very violent. This movie is so obscene.
Oh, it's I think he's a ghost, but he's also justice, and I think the best way to describe what the man with no name is he's like the human version of the Grim Reaper. Right. So, like, think about it. He's a haunted supernatural. It's basically a revenge story about a cigarillo outlaw that comes into town and kind of raids it in a way from all their, you know, from all the sins that, you know, the whole town created. I just think this movie's great. I think it's great.
Mr. Slender, is there room for a vengeful ghost in the Western
of an outlaw? Is this movie? Maybe there's some supernatural elements, and it's like, maybe it's too much, but like the raw point of Eastwood, like without this movie, you wouldn't have gotten all the other great. You wouldn't have gotten Josie Wales. You wouldn't have gotten, him and Fistful of Dollars and stuff like that, because if you think about it, right, like in some of those other movies, right, we never really get his name either. So it's like a saga of, you know, or it's a prerequisite of like those movies, High Plains Drifter.
Mr. Slender, do we owe a debt of gratitude to this film for Clint Eastwood training his directorial ability to give us the films that he can run with?
Well, I definitely think we are grateful that he would go on to make bigger and better movies. And then and one of those being Pale Rider. So to touch on the supernatural elements in Pale Rider, Clint Eastwood rides into town on a pale horse. People don't know his name. It turns out he's a preacher and he has bullet wounds on his back. And by the end of the movie, it's quite clear and explicitly made that he was a divine ghost of justice, you know. So I really think that was Clint Eastwood's course correction for what we saw in High Plains Drifter. So, like, I think he was there. He had the kernel of a good idea. He just needed to work it a bit more, and he would eventually work it a bit more. And he does have a much better career than he did in 73, you know. And it started by making a bad movie, you know. You can't always win. You know, like you can't win the belt the first time you go up against the champ, right? You know, you got to earn it. You got to go through your squash matches, right? And this was a
Kazuchika Okada did.
Yeah, well, Okada's
quiet. You,
his booker is
he's a superhuman. He doesn't count.
Uncle, so it's a little easy.
Take that, Okada.
Yeah, can't we go for one podcast without throwing shade at Okada?
I like Okada.
No, he's pretty.
Not
great.
Anymore.
Yeah, so that's what I would say. It's like you have to hit. You have to take those losses. You have to take your lumps. You have to put in the work, and that's what this is. You know.
And that's Eastwood, and that's what like every blue collar man should be, right? That's the humanity of it. I think that's what.
Yeah, you know, it's like my first job was being a janitor. You know, I wouldn't say that was a good job, you know, but I have a good job now. You know, so you put in the work, right?
Are you the man you are today because of it?
I don't know, to your honor. I don't know what kind of man I am today.
Toothpaste in a bottle or whatever.
That's a whole other trial.
Yeah, that is a different trial. That's true. Now, I'll just let you continue, Your Honor, while I'm taking care of my toothpaste.
Did you have any further exhibits, Defender, or would you like to rest?
I'll rest.
Very well. Both sides have rested. The prosecution now may present its closing argument. Mr. Slender, you may begin.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. I would just like to point out, for the court's edification, I could have done this whole case in my Clint Eastwood impression. But I didn't.
Thank you.
And I think that should really weigh heavily on the jury's mind.
You should have.
Well, I guess I could do the closing. Eastwood would go on to make some truly wonderful movies, and some have been criminally overlooked, like 1990s White Hunter, Black Heart. But High Plains Drifter is not in that realm. You see, punk, we have an overwrought script with dubious moral lessons and pacing that does not... I think he would say dubious. I'm sorry, Mr. Eastwood. Please keep...
Quiet, jerk.
Yes! Ryan's completely right. I was going to say it sounded like Casey Kasem at points, and now that Ryan said it too...
Wait, like Casey Kasem? Like his radio voice? Like, I'm Casey Kasem, and I'm
counting
today's
down, it's the number 5 in America.
All right. Order in my court. Order in my court.
Counting down the worst movie we've... Oh my God, I hear it now. Okay.
I advise you to drop this line of closing argument.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Okay. All right. So I just wanted to give a shout out to White Hunter Blackheart, which he released in the 90s, which is an actually really good, criminally underrated, underappreciated Eastwood gem, whereas High Plains Drifter, I feel, is just held in way too high an esteem when you look at how tenuous the script is, and the dubious moral lessons, like I said, and the pacing that does not keep us enraptured. But
Your Honor, I would like to see the box office, like to see the box office numbers, so we can decide which movie is better.
You know,
well,
I
can look that up while
prosecutor. I don't have that on hand, but I'm willing to bet High Plains Drifter made a lot more money.
High Plains Drifter definitely made more money. And if all we're talking about money and what's better. That
budget 1.6 million, box office 10.8.
Oh man, well, okay, so look up White Hunter Blackheart, too.
Why don't you do your own legwork here, Schnitzel?
Why do I have to? I can't get this toothpaste back in this bottle, and now you want me to look stuff up, too? All right, I'm gonna look it up and I'll interrupt Mander's closing. Then.
Oh,
that's
God,
what I'm gonna do
budget White Hunter Blackheart, budget 24 million, box office $2 million.
Oh wow! I would like that fact stricken from the record. Here,
look at High Plains Drifter, right?
No, that is entered.
High Plains Drifter made money.
Made money. Made $10 million.
I didn't see any of it.
Order in my court.
I'm pretty sure that was my closing, Your Honor. We may never know.
Pretty great.
This has turned into a kangaroo court for sure. Manders, you may present your closing argument, preferably without being interrupted by...
And also in your Casey Kasem impression.
Oh, God.
They can't all be Ben the Martian.
I don't know if I could do it. Because yours is pretty good. So I'm. You can win that one. I really adore High Plains Drifter, and it really has nothing to do with like what happens on the screen. Obviously, like I think the biblical stuff, and I think him being this mysterious anti-hero, right? Like when you think of like for me, like when, like let's tie into wrestling to this. When I think of like my favorite wrestlers growing up, it was Stone Cold and Sting, and they were very anti-hero, right? They weren't the all-American superhero, right? Like John Wayne might be or like Ronald Reagan or whatever, or like stuff like that. But it's like, or Captain America or whatever the hell you want to say. But like for the man with no name and tying with like those people, like that's like my connection, why I adore this movie. But besides like all of that, like I think the film came out and it became a big box office hit, at least in 73, making $15 million or whatever is pretty good, especially back then. And then when they only spent about five, and Eastwood also, I think this, when you think of stereotype Westerns, you think of, you know, like that all American stylistic it was really Westerns back then also like the super was it really like High Plains Drifter 2? No, but I don't know. I hold on. I'm trying to collect
my... Oh yeah, take your time.
Yeah, take your time, man. You're doing great, dude.
I can edit anything out, so don't worry.
He doesn't, but he can.
I think it's better when it's not cut. I just think being the way how he like this movie is very independent in the way that he put a lot of thought with having, you know, you really have to like pay attention to the movie. Yeah, it seems like nothing's going on, but just a lot of like those symbolisms and being uncertain and being uncertainty, and that's kind of like what life is in a way, where like the unknown, you don't know what's going to happen, and you don't know if he's. Is he a ghost, or is he the ghost of the Marshal, or is the symbolic term him being, you know, the Marshal basically just raising hell and terrorizing the whole town, when really in reality, right, he's not looking for the town, he's not trying to save the town, he's just giving justice to the Marshal. And I think the way they do it and a lot of the symbolisms it has for my influences in wrestling, that's what makes me enjoy the movie. So at least I like it. I don't give a shit what anybody else thinks. So.
Yeah. Take that,
we'll
Ryan.
See what the jury does. Members of the jury, Mr. Rob Maynard, Mr. Big Ben Hassler, and Mr. The Man with No Name, but apparently also goes by Ryan Luis Rodriguez. You have all heard the facts concerning this case. It is now up to you to determine this film is guilty of being a bad movie. The bailiff will escort you to the deliberation room to render your verdict. I'm sure all of Clint Eastwood's family loved the film, but just what does his chair think?
Topical.
Dated political humor.
Yeah, I love it. Very well done.
All right, guys. Interesting case. This is a fun movie. We're not quite in spooky season yet, but this kind of dances that line. Ryan, what did you think?
I kind of love this movie, and it really says something because it loses me 10 minutes in. The sexual assault is enough to make me walk away and say, nope, not for me. But it actually pulls me back in within 5 or 10 minutes, and that really doesn't happen. So it says something to the kind of ineffable quality of the film that I think is really strong, especially for a 70s Western, which is kind of like very much in a genre that came and went really quick. Like, we were done with the Western quicker than we knew it. But I think that this is one of the kind of standalone examples of that genre, especially in that decade. Like, I've seen Pale Rider. I don't really care for it. I actually like this more to speak to the explicitness. It's very unexplicit. It's very kind of passive in its voice. And it's very economical stylistically. And that's something that I appreciate, especially with the overkill that we have today. I like looking back and seeing movies like this.
Yeah, and I think Eastwood is his character being ambiguous is what's cool. It's like, I mean, the common sense thing is that he's like the sheriff's brother or something, right? I think it's his regular stunt double is the guy who actually plays the sheriff.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So he's obviously supposed to look like him. That is kind of the logical thing. But then you can go to the spooky supernatural where, you know, maybe it essentially is his ghost, right? For some reason, it looks a little different to them. But that's part of the ambiguity. And that's very cool because, I mean, he fades away at the end. You know, he you never really know anything about him. And he basically is vengeance. I mean, that's the thing is Eastwood starts this movie in a black hat. We used anti-hero. I don't even think so. I think he is just a spirit of revenge. And yeah. I wouldn't even call it justice. I'd call it vengeance. And not only does he have vengeance against the town who set him up to get killed, and he has vengeance against the three men who actually did the deed. So he's interested in killing everybody in this movie. You know, he thinks everyone deserves to suffer. Big Ben, what did you think? Except for Mordecai.
He's his friend. He's his good friend.
I don't have much else to say that's more eloquent than the way you put it. Yeah, the rape at the beginning, that turns me off. And not only does that scene turn me off, there's a scene in the middle too where, like, Clint Eastwood's depiction of women is very, very icky. He clearly doesn't have much respect for the gender, you know, the characters within the film. But to quote the defender, I have seen so many damn Westerns. It is fun to see something that's a little bit different. And I do like that. You know, I love supernatural films. I pretty much gravitate towards horror if I don't even know what I'm going to watch. And I didn't know this film was going to be like that. I went into this blind. And then the fact that it started sort of introducing like these very vibrant images of him getting whipped and the town painted red like hell, loved all of that. You don't see that too often, and the fact that it's different just drew me in. So I'm ready to lock in mine as not guilty. I thought it was pretty, it was a fun watch.
Yeah, and obviously the defense, Manders has a lot of passion for this movie. He really likes it. And he was great enough to join us. He's a man who usually lets his hands do the talking for him. So he had to come here and argue against Schlenzo here. But I think Schlenzo, he put up some of the best defensive points, you know, like I didn't consider that he might be death riding the pale horse and painting the town into hell and punishing all the sinners. That's a very interesting take, another supernatural take on the movie that I think is there. And its ambiguity is definitely beneficial. So Big Ben, you're locked in. You're going not guilty.
I'm locked in.
Ryan, you're going to swerve us all?
Well, kind of.
Really?
So, yeah, because the defense did basically agree with basically everything the prosecution said. So that's got to count for something. So I'm going to go guilty.
Okay, all right. On the technicalities. Luckily, I'm going not guilty. I will not be the hanging judge. There was literally no way. I own this movie. I've seen it dozens of times. But I do think that some of that stuff that we talked about, some of that problematic nature in the beginning, which frankly the prosecution didn't really go into it in depth. He did talk about it. But I think that's what makes the movie kind of worth talking about. You know, can we root for this guy anymore after that? And if you can, Ryan, then I think almost anyone can. So yeah, not guilty. So let's get out there and tell that a very handsome judge.
Mr. Foreman, have you reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor. In the case of the people versus High Plains Drifter, we find the defendant not guilty of being a bad movie.
You're going to have to put in gunshots there, Maynard.
Was that
I'm not putting in gunshots. Maynard said no.
Look at all those gunshots. The verdict is so rendered. High Plains Drifter. That is what a gun sounds like for sure. High Plains Drifter is hereby free to drift just a little bit further down the road, perhaps into a Blu-ray player or streaming box near you. Court is adjourned.
This is Rootin' Tootin' Sheriff Mumbly Mumberson reporting to you live from outside the Reels of Justice. Dylan J. Schlender, would you care to share your thoughts on the jury's verdict, you big dope?
Hey, let me tell you something, Mumbly, and yes, see you shorter than Mordecai over here, getting in my face over this trial. Well, let me tell you something. I had a lot of fun here tonight. I want to thank Manders for being such a good lawyer, and I'm glad he didn't larry at me. I saw him. He was thinking about doing it. Would have killed me. So I'm going to get out of here before he gets out here and say adieu to everyone, and I'll see you all later.
Thank you, I guess. And here comes one called Manders. Excuse me, could we get a word on how you feel about today's verdict, as if it matters?
It's a bit madness. I thought about larrying the shit out of Dylan over there, but I decided not to because I am not guilty. If I was guilty, I would have raised hell, would have been pissed off, probably would have spit on the judge, and then would have drifted away into a gym. So.
Thank you very much. I hate you all. And that's all we have from the courthouse today. Let's go back to the studio for post-trial analysis.
The good, the bad, and the mumbly.
Oh, my God.
There it is.
There it is.
Well, spoiler alert, I actually like this movie quite a bit.
Of course, yeah. Of course.
It was a fun one to talk about, though,
for sure. You made valid points, though. Like, yeah, it's definitely not, like, the greatest Western I've ever seen, but it's so out there that it makes it that way.
Yeah, you know what I like about it? I feel like if you normally don't watch Westerns, maybe give this one a shot because it's a little different and then you it might get you into the genre even.
Yeah, it's an entry point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Dylan, you were right about Popeye.
Oh, thank you.
What? In Malta, what about the set in Malta was built specifically for Popeye and you can still visit it if you go to Malta.
See, I thought Schlenzo was going to say it's a waste because they destroy it. It's like, you know, people could have lived in that town.
I didn't want to go that hard into it. You know,
what a waste of perfectly good wooden lumber houses.
You know how much lumber costs nowadays? They had an easy 73.
Think about the paint, too. Like, that had to have been hundreds and hundreds of gallons of paint that they just made.
Yeah. Yeah. But they had plenty of it. But good trial, and I do think it eases us a little into the Halloween season, which is about to kickstart next week, which we're excited for.
The Malevolent, or
well, we're always doing horror movies, but
dude, we need a James Bond horror movie, and we'll really be on brand.
God, the only closest thing I could think is like License to Kill, or maybe No Time to Die, the new one, maybe. But no spoilers on that one.
No, Spectre, because it opens on the Day of the Dead.
And it's Spectre, which is a spooky name.
There you go.
So that very good. Manders, what has been keeping you busy? What have you been up to lately? I should tell you that Ryan and Ben, they're not pro wrestling fans. You've met me and Dylan. We met you at a show. But they have no idea what we're talking about at all. Like, it's complete Greek. Complete Greek to them.
I understand about hurting Dylan. That's a language that transcends wrestling.
But some of our listeners are definitely going to be marks like us. So, you know, what have you been up to?
God, just been working outside a lot and been wrestling a lot. And those two things definitely keep me busy a lot.
Now, we saw on Twitter you got on the PWI list this year.
Yeah, that's 3 years in a row.
Oh, that's huge! That's huge!
Yeah, congratulations.
Is this the highest number
That no, you, was... so last year was I was higher. I was 335.
Okay.
But in the I guess in the evaluation period, they do it. It's like what is it like from like mid June to like 2022. So it's June of 2021 into like July of 2022. I think it what is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe June of 2022. I didn't win any belts or anything like that, but goddamn, I was a lot of places though.
Yeah,
they didn't really say anything about me and Silas Young, which I was a little bummed about because I thought that feud at AAW was pretty in Chicago was pretty damn good, and Silas Young's like, you know, he was former Ring of Honor television champion and one of the best champions to ever be at AAW, but that's all right, it's fine. But,
yeah, the cage match, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. And,
yeah, the last real man.
Yeah, and he's... It's biased, right? But the fact that 3 years in a row being in the PWI, that's pretty damn cool. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are how many thousands of wrestlers out there? And now yeah. You know you're in the top 500.
Yeah, in the whole world from WWE to the lowest of the low. So I'll take it.
Well, exactly. So it is a huge accomplishment. So congratulations on that. So, you know, you mentioned Cowboys being kind of an influence on you, you know, besides Eastwood, is there, you know, you're a Cowboy, professional wrestler. That's your gimmick. So where do you, what kind of spaces do you draw influence from that?
Fuck dude, anything really like from on the screen of seeing Clint Eastwood and John Wayne to like Buffalo Bill to, you know, even musically, like just from like Coulter Wall and I wouldn't say Sturgill Simpson is really a cowboy, but if you guys are into Sturgill Simpson, go listen to him. It's just that Western like vibe, you know, like Waylon Jennings.
Is another
big one on me.
The Outlaw Country,
like Skinner, which I wouldn't say they're really cowboy either, but a lot of it's just that I guess that country boy hospitality and you know all that kind of good stuff. That kind of
yeah,
it's the vibe, as the kids would say. Yeah.
Real nice till the bell rings, right?
Yeah, and a lot of others too is like a lot of it for me is a lot of music really. Like Cody Johnson's another guy, like he was like a real rodeo cowboy and he got hurt. So then he decided to be a country music artist and it's freaking, he has a documentary on Amazon Prime. And I think it's like maybe an hour, maybe a little over, but it's freaking damn worth it. And it's pretty damn good. And it's just talks about the triumphs that he had in his life that, which we all deal with and do every day and just that kind of stuff.
No, that's cool. That's cool.
So there's a lot of I try to grab out of that. And it molds me into me, right? It's like what I've liked since I was a kid. Just kind of.
Yeah. You got to feel authentic out there or people won't buy into it.
Even wrestling too. Like if I had to pick if you pick a wrestler, right? Everyone tries to say that I try to be, which is I'm flabbergasted because he's so damn good is like Stan Hansen or like you know Cowboy Bob Orton or like list goes.
Is that why you've been wearing that cast for 3 years?
The ace.
Yeah, stuff like that.
I definitely see Hanson with your roughneck style and the big lariat. Yeah, that's absolutely there for sure. Kind of that blackjack mentality.
Yeah, like that's another guy that's like just so damn good.
Yeah, Mulligan and Lanza.
Or
yeah,
like Terry Funk or Ron Bass and even guys like I wouldn't say Dr. Death was a cowboy at all.
Well, you do the Stampede.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So. And his trainer was also a cowboy gimmick is Cowboy Bill Watts. And that was the originator of the Stampede. And just, you know, also
I got to tell you
being an ex-athlete at Iowa and that too kind of correlates with the Dr. Death too. And yeah, you know, Terry Gordy and it's just, list goes on. It's just
love Bam Bam.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, this is funny. Cause, Chlenzo hasn't been watching as long as me. I mean, I'm like a lifelong devotee, but we were watching, it was like probably a year or so ago, and he asked, are there any cowboy wrestlers? And I was like, it's, you know, it is a very wide, yes, there's a lot of
fun. We actually, I think, met you like 2 days later too, after.
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just as far as you've been working everywhere, is there anywhere you think you'll be working soon that you're excited about, or anyone you might be working with soon that you're excited about?
Yeah, I've done some stuff with them, like on their digital platforms. It's Impact Wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's in the cards.
You'd like to.
Well, I would like to. You know, yeah. Never say never in wrestling. And been doing a lot of stuff with him lately where, like, I had this match with Speedball Mike Bailey at Wrestling Revolver. Yep. And it kind of, you know, Speedball is like this – he's like this karate wrestler. And he's absolutely amazing. I think he was, like, in the top 25 PWI. Right?
He was 30 this year, exactly.
Like, yeah. Well, he was in, and he was in Bola this year.
Yeah. Man,
he was in the finals of Bola.
Oh, he got robbed too. Man. No, Speedball.
Garcia is good.
Garcia deserved it. No, but Speedball is great. And you had an awesome match against him, man. Like, I was hoping you were going to turn him inside out, but, you know.
Maybe another day.
Another day.
Yeah, I think that really helped a lot. We're to the point where they put it on their digital thing. And then not long after that, I got invited to do a show that they did in Chicago, and I was on their show, on the Impact show, which was sick. And then this Saturday I'm wrestling Josh Alexander for the Impact World Championship. So it don't get any better than that, man. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, that is going to be cool. Now, all right, so I'm gonna shift the tone because we have talked wrestling, and I know Ryan has understood less than half of it.
He actually knows who Josh Alexander is. So
we'll switch the gear to movies. We always ask our guests for a recommendation of a movie you think people should see. So what is a movie people should see? You know, it could be your favorite movie. It could be a movie you just saw last week.
This movie I saw, I think it was about a month ago. It's on Netflix. It's called, I think it's called The Dog, or hold on, or the, oh, it's The Power of the Dog.
The Power of the Dog.
That's what it's called.
Yeah.
And, it's kind of, it has some similarities to High Plains Drifter. It's very eerie. It's very slow. There isn't as much killing at all from High Plains Drifter, but there's so much symbolisms and you really have to pay attention. And you think like you're about like an hour in, you're like, oh my God, like what am I watching? What's going to happen here? And then all of a sudden the last 10 minutes of it is just explosive. And I don't want to like have any spoilers with it, but it totally mind fucks you at the end. And then it makes you like, I have to like think about this. And then you either watch it back or you go find it like, you know, have it explained to you, and then hopefully your thoughts or whatever are similar, and turns out they were, and it's freaking mind blowing. It's also a Western, but it also at the same time isn't a Western, but it takes place in the Western prestige, or like the Manifest Destiny, or you know, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a genre mashup.
And also,
it got nominated. Nominated Best Picture this year too, right?
Yeah, yeah, yep.
The director won the Oscar for Best Director, if I recall correctly. Oh. But I'll defer to Ryan on that.
Ryan would know. Ryan,
did she? I know she's Jane Compton.
I believe so.
Jane Campion.
You're right. Coda won.
I don't even
Campton or Compton.
Campion.
Wow. Well, she must have won, and Ryan was so incensed that a woman won Best Director, he blocked it from his mind.
Straight out of Campton. But no, that is a very good recommendation. I've been putting it off, but I do need to watch it.
You know, it has been one. I think my dad really liked that one, too.
And he loves Westerns, Daryl. So. Daryl says that I can't watch it.
The man who coined the term hacker.
Absolutely.
Schlenzo, you were the legal counsel on the opposing side. So what is your recommendation?
Well, thank you very much. So imagine my surprise while looking at Big Ben Haslar's letterbox list, Recommendations of Justice. You can get the link in the show notes. Probably not.
No.
One of my favorite Westerns was absent, which is weird because I've talked about it on the show a bunch. So I'm making it official, Recommendation of Justice right now. 1967's A Rough Night in Jericho. In this movie, a town is run by a ruthless boss, and an outsider rolls into town and puts him in his place. This sounds like a typical Western, but what really makes it stand out is the show-stopping, scene-stealing
musical number.
No. But it is Dean Martin, which is excellent. So Martin takes a heel turn as the town boss, Alex Flood, and he oozes menace and violence in a way that I did not think Martin was capable of. George Peppard of A-Team fame is able to keep up with him as the White Hat, and the final showdown between these two is one for the ages. And for some extra fun, be sure to check out the trailer that was released for this film, where Dean Martin explains bits of the movies, and he remarks on how funny it is that he's the bad guy, and he's confused to why George Peppard would get the girl while he's in the movie. So it's a if the trailer doesn't convince you to watch the movie, you'll at least get a laugh out of it.
You know how they got Martin to be so mean for the movie, right?
They took away the alcohol.
Yeah, yep, they cut him off.
He did the whole movie sober.
He had to do the whole movie sober, and he was legitimately pissed. Yeah. No, good recommendation.
Thank you.
So, Big Ben, you were the judge. What was your recommendation?
I'm going to recommend a film where a man with no name enters a sleepy village to help those villagers counter an exterior threat by use of his cunning and superior fighting skills. If that sounds familiar to you, yes, The Man with No Name in Western films was adapted from Akira Kurosawa's samurai films. And so if you enjoy that trope, I'm going to suggest you check out Yojimbo and Sanjuro. I've already recommended Yojimbo, so I'll call out Sanjuro this time, but you really should check them both out as a double feature if you can. Westerns have enjoyed a smorgasbord of ideas from samurai films historically, as they're essentially warring Japan and the Wild West did have a lot of similarities. You just replace the katana for a six shooter and you're all set. And while this might sound like I'm ragging on Westerns, I'm really not, because I think that their counterparts did enjoy the sort of a cyclical relationship, and they make very good remakes when being translated from one country into another. Sanjuro is directed by Akira Kurosawa, and it stars Toshiro Mifune. And if you've seen any of their films, honestly, that's really all you need to know to pique your interest, mm-hmm. as these two were powerhouses turning out hit after hit throughout all the 1950s and 60s. So check this one out on the Criterion Channel if you have it. But Yojimbo and Sanjuro also come in a nifty Blu-ray 2-pack, which in my opinion is the better option. The streaming gods can't take it away. It is.
Yeah, and you know, actually, Ben, you make up a good point. Kurosawa and John Ford were really good friends. They were really tight. Like, Kurosawa loved the idea of the Magnificent Seven. And those two were actually going to work together to do Tora, Tora, Tora. And unfortunately, that fell through. But man, what a great timeline that would have been if those
Does
two worked together.
That make Eastwood in High Plains Drifter Daimajin?
Oh, bringing it back to Daimajin.
I think it does. Anyway,
we still have one more Daimajin film to recommend.
Yojimbo is very common in the West. They're always going, Yojimbo! Because when there's a man named Jimbo.
I can't stand it.
I will go now with my recommendation. This week, it's another Clint Eastwood Western, another that deals with the themes of revenge, lawlessness, and the chaos of the frontier. And that's 1968's Hang 'em High. Eastwood plays a retired lawman who is wrongfully accused of cattle rustling and is lynched by a posse and left for dead. But he survives, gets a pardon from a local judge, and becomes deputized as a U.S. Marshal. He is responsible for bringing the lynchers to justice. Now, while Eastwood, as cool as they come as usual, doles out justice sometimes in a swift manner, he is usually doing what he can to bring in the men he pursues alive. But shucks, you know, it just doesn't always work out that way. Pat Hingle plays the frontier judge who is meant to evoke real-world historical figure Judge Isaac Parker, famously known as the Hanging Judge, because of how many men he sentenced to death. And the film wrestles with these themes of justice in a lawless land. At this time, it's 1889. Oklahoma doesn't yet have statehood. And Hingle's character acts as the final word in the land. Hang'em High doesn't appear to be streaming free anywhere, but it's available for rent or purchase at the regular establishments.
Support your local library. Support your local
library. Rye Guy, send us on home.
My recommendation this week is another Western, albeit of the spaghetti variety, directed by Sergio Leone, Clint Eastwood's former collaborator, 1968's Once Upon a Time in the West.
Leone
was known for his atmosphere and nearly unmatched ability to conjure beautiful compositions, and like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, this film more than earns the label of epic, telling a compelling story across a beautiful, sun-drenched vista. It also features a beautiful Ennio Morricone score and an outstanding ensemble cast, including a rare villain role from Henry Fonda and Dylan's favorite actor, Charlie Bronson, as
That's
harmonica,
right.
called such because he, wait for it, plays a harmonica. Once Upon a Time in the West is currently streaming on Amazon Prime, but you should pick up the outstanding Blu-ray instead.
You know, Sergio, I think I should be playing a harmonica in this movie. Maybe they call me harmonica.
Charles, I keep telling you, the stuff with the harmonica. I imagine, I don't know what he sounds like.
You know, that's what you think every Italian sounds
like. I'm Sergio Leone.
Before we get canceled out of here, you're going to get us all canceled, Cauldron. But we are all out of show. But we want to thank our guest, one called Manders, for joining us. Thank you so much, Manders.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. This was fun.
Yeah, we hope to have you back sometime. Now you know what you're in for.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And so we'd love to have you back. And we look forward to seeing you climb the ranks and continue to get a lot of great opportunities. Hopefully come back to Connecticut and we'll come up to a show. We'll buy you a beer. Maybe even two. Well, yeah. Worcester's close to Connecticut. You know, all up here, it's a big mess. You know.
It's all pretty close.
It's all the same state, basically. Come on up here and we'll check it out. And with that, we hope everyone will join us again as well as the reels of justice keep turning.
Count it.
Manja, manja.
Perfect.
What you had?
Please follow us on Twitter at Reels of Justice, Instagram Reels of Justice, and Facebook.com/Reels of Justice.